Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, wherever you are, wherever you're listening. Hope you're having a great day, staying warm, staying safe, wherever you may be listening with all this weather that we've got going on. And I'm very happy to welcome back once again, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, friend of the show and a friend of mine, Joe Mullinax. Now, Joe, I got to ask, you know, you're not in the Memphis area, but how's the weather where you are? We're experiencing a bit of a snowpocalypse here in the good old Memphis area.
Yeah, I was about to ask, what in the world is going on down there? I've got rain. I have a little bit of drizzle right now as I leave my football practice, my two-a-day in February on President's Day, which is super weird. But it is a super weird time because you've got, what, 5 inches of snow or something like that?
Me and my wife just measured. It's about 4 inches right now and still continuing to come down. It's supposed to come down for another 2 or 3 hours as well. And then there's more
that
on the way later this week. It's crazy.
That is quite remarkable.
But, you know, hey, the we have two dogs ourselves, and so we got out earlier today. They were enjoying it. So at least it makes for fun memories.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And then I have a couple of little girls that love making snowmen. So whenever we get snow, we make a snowman here or there. So it definitely is good for the memories. And, I mean, that doesn't happen in Memphis very often. So you should enjoy it when it does, as long as you're safe and able to stay home.
Yes, sir. That's exactly correct. Well, speaking of staying home, you've had a reason to be home a bit more often, and to you on the birth of your third child. Hope the family is doing well. Mr. M-E-M, if I'm correct, from conversations we've had on Twitter, but congratulations to you and your family on the new arrival.
I appreciate that. Yeah, Mitchell Eugene Mullinax came a couple of weeks ago. A pleasant coincidence that it's M-E-M, but it isn't lost on me that it fits nicely with a city and a place that, you know, changed my life dramatically. It's, you know, sometimes you hear people talk about reflecting on, is there one choice in your life that you made that, like, drastically impacted the direction of your life? And for me, it was moving to Memphis. It's, you know, how I, you know, went from a girlfriend to a wife with my wife. It's, you know, we had that experience together. It's how I came across the Grizzlies and blogging, which has, you know, impacted my life in ways I never thought possible. So it was a happy coincidence, but a fitting one, to say the least.
Well, glad to hear that you and the family are well. And again, thank you for taking time to spend with us here. And so we'll get right to it. The Grizzlies, you know, 22 games in the season. Basically, we are a third of the way through the season. And I just want to get your initial thoughts. You know, at first, we'll talk about this. So, you know, Joe, you have been on record of saying, and it makes perfect sense, one thing about this team to keep in mind, we truly don't know what the identity of this team is yet, because two of the main talents, Justice Winslow and Jaren Jackson Jr., have not played a game for us, especially together. So it's hard to understand really what the true talent or identity of this team is. However, I do think that, you know, in terms of being a very good passing team, in terms of being a team that right now has shooting at its disposal, at least more than other iterations of the Grizzlies have been, is there any identity of this team that you are buying into that you think will really continue to stand out as a strength going forward?
I think schematically they have an identity. I think that's fair to say. In terms of what Taylor Jenkins, you know, Jason Wexler in the front office, obviously, you know, Tayshaun Prince and those guys, what they want the organization, the franchise, to be moving forward, I think that has become pretty clear. They're looking for blue-collar, hard-working, good in college. What a, you know, an amazing thought to have, to draft good college basketball players. They're looking for guys that fit their mold in the draft, and they are looking for players that are going to commit defensively to creating steals and deflections. I think it was Pete and Brevin on Sunday night pointing out that the Grizzlies, as of Sunday's games, were first in the NBA in assists and first in the NBA in steals. So to me, that is the mentality in a nutshell. Defensively, they want to be a team that creates deflections, creates steals, extra opportunities for them offensively. They want to get out and run in transition through those types of plays. And then on the offensive end, they're unselfish. You know, they are extremely unselfish. John Morant is a perfect superstar for that kind of system. because you have a player in Morant who can impact the game, not just as a scorer, but almost primarily as a facilitator of offense, as a guy who off of his dribble penetration can kick out to open shooters, can find a Jonas Valanciunas rolling to the rim, and eventually a Jaren Jackson Jr. in the pick and pop game. And he has a handle and he has a vision for the game of basketball that is so malleable that it fits with almost anybody that you put alongside him, which is nice. You still want to have shooters and people like that to give him room to operate and maximize that space. But you have a point guard who is going to be able to execute what you want offensively in that manner. You have a team-first mentality when it comes to both sides of the court. For me, the identity comes from who is going to be on that next great Grizzlies team. So I think all of us see what is happening, right? And I think we all have varying degrees of excitement about it. This team's going to be good very soon. Maybe you want to argue they're good now. I would say they're mediocre now because that's what their record is, right? You are what your record says you are. They're a mediocre basketball team, but that is with all the injuries that they have been suffering through. I think that's important context to provide. For me, and the reason I know we'll talk more about this either in this show or down the road, the reason why I wouldn't do any major trades is for exactly what you just said. The idea that they have no idea who they are in terms of their roster. Jaren Jackson Jr. is believed to be a key cornerstone of what they're trying to do. We haven't seen him this season. Justice Winslow, for all the jokes about him, anytime Zach Kleiman talks about the core of this organization, he brings up Justice Winslow's name. It's not because I ask him about Justice Winslow or you ask him about Justice Winslow. He brings him up in the same breath as Jaw, and Jaren and Brandon Clark. So if Kleiman, the GM of the Grizzlies, is saying that, we probably should take him at his word that he sees a bright future for Justice Winslow once he's able to be on the floor. So I think the identity of what they are in terms of on-the-court product is pretty clear. What I mean by identity is who is going to be next to Ja Morant in that next great Grizzlies team, whether it's, you know, next season, 2 seasons from now, which is probably more than likely. You know, within the next 2 years, the expectations of this team are going to go from being a play-in contender to being where the Utah Jazz currently are as one of the top teams in the NBA. And who is going to be here when that happens? You can't answer that question right now because you haven't been able to fully accumulate the data.
And I think that's a very fair point because you're accumulating data, you know, from the top to the bottom of your roster. And let's stick with the top. You know, at the end of the day, we could talk about identity now, whenever we are fully healthy, all we want to. But that identity starts with Ja Morant. And this year, I think that they're, for lack of a better way of putting it, there's kind of the good with the bad. I think that Ja, you know, he's obviously dealt with some injuries. He's dealt with uncertainty due to COVID. You know, there's been a bit of concern. I don't necessarily know concern, but there has been some struggles when it comes to shooting and when it comes to defense. But there's also, I feel, encouragement. 5 straight games of at least 15 points and 9 assists. And you have to think with where his talent is and the ability to where he'll improve his shooting and defense in time, if this is his 4-15-17 night and 9-10 assists, that certainly is encouraging, and he certainly is still adding plenty of value to the Grizzlies. Your thoughts on Ja Morant so far this season and kind of what you've taken from how he's adjusted to the league as the league has adjusted to him a bit coming off his rookie year?
I think that when you look at Ja Morant's rookie year and what he brought at such a young age, in terms of his experience in the league, obviously, in terms of his athleticism, I compare Ja Morant's rookie season in a lot of ways, and I don't want people to yell at me for this comparison because it doesn't end well, to Robert Griffin III in 2012 in his rookie campaign with the Washington football team, then the Washington Redskins. RG3 came into the league, and he electrified it. He was remarkable. He was the rookie of the year. Nobody could defend him. And then, for the purpose of RG3, it was due to injury. And again, that's where the comparison ends. But if you wanted to insert Colin Kaepernick in that spot, if you wanted to put Lamar Jackson in that spot, you know, when a player comes along who plays the position in a way that forces you to reevaluate how you defend the position, because that's the difference between Ja and, say, De'Aaron Fox. Like, Fox is a wonderful basketball player, and I enjoy watching De'Aaron Fox play, and he, in a bad game, didn't do as well against the Grizzlies as he normally does, but he still made an impact on the game. I think he had 20-some points and, you know, a lot of assists. So the point I'm trying to make is with Morant, it's his vision at such a young age. Fox is in his fourth season. Ja is in his second. And Ja did things in his first season that you have rarely, if ever, seen a point guard do. So teams had to figure out, how are you going to get the ball out of this guy's hands? And they're doing things to Morant that he hadn't seen before. Defenses have gotten smart to what they were doing, much like a football team got smart to Colin Kaepernick or got smart to Lamar Jackson or RG3. When you innovate offense, you have responses. Coaches are paid for a reason. Film crews and film staffs, analysts, you know, they're going to figure out a way to slow you down. And it comes down to how you counterpunch. I think that it's a combination of the health issues that lead to Josh shooting not as well, because you don't have a Jaren Jackson Jr. to help with that spacing, to help carry that offensive burden. When you're kicking out passes to Dylan Brooks, no offense to Dylan Brooks, he's a hot and cold offensive commodity. We all know that at this point. Like, if you had done that against Sacramento on Sunday, that's great. If you had done that in some of the games prior to Sacramento, it wouldn't have ended as well for you. So I think that the quality of people that he's playing around has impacted that. I think the teams have been able to say, we're not going to let Morant beat us. And because of that, he is the focal point of game plans in a way that he wasn't a year ago. And that has impacted him too. But to his credit, he has said that that's not good enough. He has shown the propensity, whether he's taking extra shots after games, watching extra film that coaches talk about. He's trying to develop and figure out ways to get better on that front and find wrinkles in his game that will make opposing defenses pay for the ways that they're blitzing him off of the direct handoffs or the dribble handoffs or the direct pick and rolls or those sorts of things. So it's fascinating to watch as he grows, because you're literally watching a player who electrified the NBA last year in terms of how he played the point guard position. Defenses have caught up, and now in real time, Sean, we are seeing how he is going to respond, how he is going to react. And I have not been discouraged because I have the context. Others maybe look at his shooting numbers and say, oh my gosh, he's having a sophomore slump. I know from watching the games that he is still very much active in terms of his vision, in terms of his creation off the dribble. He is still doing things as a passer that not very many people in the NBA can do. And his shot is going to come as he gets more comfortable with ways that they're going to counter what defenses are trying to do to him. So I use the RG3 comparison again. Nobody could stop Griffin that first season, and injury is eventually what did stop him. But in terms of the athleticism, maybe Lamar Jackson and Colin Kaepernick are better comps. How are you going to respond when the league catches up to what you do so uniquely? We have somebody in Morant in Memphis that appears primed and ready to do his best to do just that because of his mentality and his maturity and leadership skills.
Now, I talk about Lamar Jackson all the time as being someone who, yes, he was a different look, but then as the book got bigger on him and defenses had more data, they had more, you know, examples for him to go off of, you know, they adjusted to him. Well, how can you rewrite that book? You know, Lamar Jackson is still in that process himself. So I think that's a wonderful example. I think that Ja is doing it. It's how much faith do you put into the talent of a Morant being able to rewrite that book to where he can adjust back. And I do think that there's consensus, you know, faith that he eventually will. But one of the things that really has stepped up for the Grizzlies is that while Morant has perhaps struggled individually, he certainly has gelled well with the lineups that Taylor Jenkins has put out on the court. Coming up, I'll talk with Joe about some really successful starts to games with the Grizzlies lineups. No matter where you are in the U.S. right now, it seems like there's a good chance that you're getting a very, very good reminder of just how impactful winter can be. Well, I can tell you this, many of us don't need snow on the ground to let us know that winter can also be impactful on the cars that we drive. And while I'm not someone that can tell you how to do the repairs on your car, I can tell you with certainty where you can go to get the car parts that you need for the repairs that need to be done, and that's rockauto.com. Rockauto.com is a great place because it offers a variety of benefits for you if you need car repairs done. For one, it's likely going to have what you need, no matter the part or the make and model that you have. And also, within a few clicks of the button, you're going to find what you need and be good to go.
whether you do your own repairs, you have to get someone to do the repairs, or you do repairs for others, RockAuto.com is a very feasible resource because it's economically friendly. This is a family-owned business that's been around for more than 20 years. They know that car repairs typically fall outside of the budget, so they tried to make things as cost-friendly as possible. When you go to RockAuto.com, let them know that the Locked On Podcast Network sent you. RockAuto.com, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the car parts that you will ever need. Visit RockAuto.com today. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. Peter Bukowski hosts Locked On Today, a daily podcast breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to Locked On Today wherever you get podcasts.
So, Joe, I had you on the show before the season started, and that was when you talked about start Desmond Bane, you cowards. Well, we finally got that opportunity to see Desmond Bane start. Unfortunately, it was only two games due to a death in his family. Again, we obviously want to send our thoughts and prayers to Desmond and his family. The thing that I will say, though, is that so we've got, you know, good results, especially when it came to shooting, from Desmond Bane being in the lineup with Ja Dillon, Kyle Anderson, and Jonas Valanciunas. But, you know, we also talked about Grayson Allen being the starter and some speculation on that. Joe, I'll tell you, the lineup numbers from when Grayson starts next to the other four guys are really encouraging. Is it more of a case of it being interchangeable to whether you start Bane or Grayson? Or is there something about, you know, Bane that really sticks out to you? I guess my question is, do you still stick with Bane as the starter in your opinion? Or do you think we're to the point to where you could start Grayson or Bane and this lineup still be advantageous?
I would prefer starting Desmond Bane because he's an elite three-point shooter and Grayson Allen isn't, at least in terms of the body of work. Even going back to college, you know, Grayson has a lot of things going for him right now. He's playing better defensively, and I wrote about this when I wrote about Dillon Brooks last week. You know, you could make a legitimate argument that Grayson Allen is a better defender right now than Dillon Brooks is. I think I don't know that I fully agree with that because, again, context is required. Dillon defends different players than Grayson is asked to defend. So I do think that's important to point out. But at the same time, if you look at the numbers, you watch the film, Grayson is doing things defensively that he hasn't done in his NBA career in terms of being able to play his position and play it well on both ends of the floor. I think that I want guys that are elite at something in the starting lineup. And to me, Desmond Bane is an elite shooter. Grayson Allen is more of a jack of all trades. And Coach Dinkins talked about this. I think it was me that asked the question. It all kind of blends together right now because of the little one that you brought up at home in the last segment. But I think it was me that asked about Grayson. It might have been someone else. And he talked about how it was a disservice to Grayson to just talk about him and his three-point shooting, which has been good so far this season. Grayson is able to create off the dribble. Grayson is able to do things as a secondary facilitator that you could argue Desmond isn't as good at yet. And I think that's fair. I think Desmond doesn't get as much credit for those things as he should, but I'm willing to nod in approval that Grayson is a better pick-and-roll creator than Desmond Bane is right now. I guess you could, again, logically speaking, you could argue for either. And you got to remember De'Anthony Melton will eventually come back. And I think that Melton is shooting better than people give him credit for. Melton is definitely a better defender than Bane and Allen are. And you can make an argument for Melton. So those are all three guys that could be in that mix. But I do think in terms of what Grayson does well, Grayson shoots threes at a very high clip. His three-point rate is among the highest in the NBA. He defends without fouling, which is one of his strongest points in terms of how he plays defense. And those are two things that Coach Jenkins values very much. And you hear him talk about a lot. And I think that's why Grayson continues to get rewarded with opportunity. And to Allen's credit, he's taken advantage of it. So to answer your question, I would still start Bane, but I don't think there's as strong of an argument anymore when he starts Allen. Like, I would be angry a month ago when he would start Allen instead of Bane, and that's where the start Desmond Bane, you cowards thing came from. I think Grayson has done enough to say, I am able to do the things that Coach Jenkins wants me to do. I may not be elite at shooting like Desmond Bane is, but I'm good enough at all these other things and executing the schemes that we talked about in the first segment, the way that Coach Jenkins wants them to be executed, that I deserve consideration for this as well. So I want Desmond. And I think that if they weren't undersized, you could maybe argue for Allen and Desmond together and benching Dylan Brooks. But at the same time, that's not going to happen. They're going to keep starting Dylan Brooks, and it's going to be either Allen or Bane. And at this point, while I would prefer Bane, I'm not going to call anybody a hypothetical coward for starting Allen anymore.
Well, and you were right. You know, there was a very good point to the reason why you had talked about starting Bane, you know, in that spot. But the great thing about it, Joe, is this, is that you can make a case for Bane. You can make a case for Allen. And I could see it. You know, I think either way, you know, you're fine doing it. But the amazing thing is that, okay, you start one of them. But then when you come to the Grizzlies' second unit, you've now got Tyus Jones and Brandon Clark back in their most ideal roles. Though Brandon Clark did do a decent job as a starter compared to last year, but both of them are getting back on track. And now who you don't start between Allen and Bane, they're on that second unit, but you've also got Melton and Xavier Tillman. I mean, Joe, I understand you can only get so much excited about a bench unit, but the combination of BC and Tyus being back on track, what BC and Tillman can do, there are so many different duos and trios that you can incorporate between the starting lineup and the bench unit that depth and versatility are really starting to be difference-making characteristics of this team. And the great thing about it is that all of these things are under control because the talents are under control for multiple years. That has to be highly encouraging and exciting when you look at this Grizzlies team, especially as they get back to health.
Absolutely. I think you're allowed to be excited while also pointing out things that come with the youth and inexperience that the team has. Like you wrote about for us over at GBB on Monday, talking about, you know, inexperience, inconsistency, how that inconsistency kind of intertwines with frustration because you see the team doing well in spots and then they struggle in spots. Well, that's part of being young and inexperienced. And you wrote about that pretty well for us over at GBB for Monday. I think that when you look at this roster, and again, you're talking about the roster as it currently is. Imagine once Jaren Jackson Jr. and Justice Winslow are back. And then you're talking about a hypothetical bench unit that includes Tyus Jones, Grayson Allen, De'Anthony Melton, Desmond Bane, Brandon Clark, Kyle Anderson. I didn't even say Xavier Tillman. Like, it's remarkable what they have established in just 2 years now in terms of their depth, in terms of the way that this team can play and be malleable and really can go in whatever direction the front office wants it to go. The world is their oyster. And I do believe that you look at that bench unit, again, that hypothetical bench of Tyus, Melton, Clark, which isn't hypothetical. Those were the core pieces of one of the best reserve units in the entire NBA last year. But again, you add a Kyle Anderson to that mix. You add a Grayson Allen or a Desmond Bane. And you're all of a sudden looking at a situation where you have one of the best benches in the NBA to go along with a starting lineup of again, hypothetically, they have to be healthy first, but Ja Morant, Dylan Brooks, Justice Winslow, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Jonas Valanciunas. That's a damn good basketball team, Sean. And they might be inconsistent because they're young. But it begs the question, you know, it's fun to talk about trades and Bradley Beal and Zach LaVine. And, yeah, they need something. You look at Dylan Brooks, and he's just so hit or miss. He's hot or cold. He had a great game against Sacramento. But that's just not there all the time. And you want to see what it looks like with Justice Winslow in the fold and Jaren Jackson Jr. and how it all will kind of fit together. Because we talk about they need a trade, and I still think they do. But like we talked about earlier, we don't know that for sure. Like, what if Justice Winslow is the guy that fixes this whole problem? And you have a remarkable bench unit. Justice lets Dylan be what Dylan needs to be, a catch-and-shoot guy who can create off the dribble some, but he shouldn't be the second leading dribble penetration option, and he wouldn't be with Justice Winslow in the lineup. So it's just more – everything you just said is more of an argument or adding to the argument that they shouldn't make a major trade, because they have no idea what they have in front of them. They literally, on their roster right now, could have everything they need except maybe one piece. And that would make all the difference for them between, you know, 2 years from now being a championship contender or shipping out somebody like a De'Anthony Melton who's 22 years old and could very well develop an offensive game that makes him very valuable beyond his contract. Sending out him and Yang for, and multiple picks and Brandon Clark for Bradley Beal, Is it worth doing that when you don't know what you have in your hand? And I think they're trying – that would be like playing poker blind, like playing Texas Hold'em and not knowing what your cards that you have in your hand are and just letting it ride. That's not the MO of this front office. That's not how they operate. So the more and more that I think about it, talk to smart people like you, I don't see them really doing anything at the trade deadline because they want to see what they are before they make any drastic shifts into what they want to be. Because what they want to be may already somehow be here, which would be pretty remarkable considering the state of the franchise 2 years ago.
Absolutely. And one thing that, you know, I agree with you on is that, you know, this team at 11-11, you know, they've got proof that what they have in place, there are good things going on with this team, even if it is inconsistent in times. You're certainly seeing improvement. Well, one piece that we do know a lot about is Jonas Valanciunas. And coming up, I'm going to talk with Joe a bit more about that. Some improved play, perhaps, from Jonas, whatever it may be. His connection with Ja is certainly shining through. We'll discuss that in the Grizzlies' upcoming schedule coming up.
We all have different reasons as to why we consider watching sports fun or being able to watch games in person fun as we get back to normal settings around the U.S. and the world due to all that's been going on. But however you choose to have fun, whether it's being around friends, being around family, just the overall passion for the team that you cheer for some of us, that fun includes also being able to make a bit of a profit off the sports that we watch and the athletes that we love to see. And if that's your case, I've got one place that has you covered and one place that you can trust, and that is BetOnline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus for your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts. Promo code Locked On. Again, head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up and receive your 50% welcome bonus using the promo code Locked On your first deposit. 2020 is mercifully over. It's time for a fresh start and a few more wins. If you're betting this year and want more wins, listen to Locked On Bets with your boy Q and Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports. They are picking college basketball, NHL, and NBA locks all winter long. Subscribe to Locked On Bets wherever you get podcasts.
So, Joe, obviously, you know, we were even to the point when JV was out under health and safety protocol. Folks talking about, you know, hey, with Xavier Tillman playing the way he is, do we really need JV? And I'll be honest, I can certainly understand. I think two conversations can be had. You can make a case to where if you got enough future value, trading Jonas Valanciunas could make sense. But I think that that talk is silent for now and for good reason. We've talked about it plenty of times before. He certainly is valued by his teammates. But I will say, as that book's gotten bigger on Ja, one thing that also was out there numbers-wise, Ja plays much more effectively with JV on the court and their connection there. But it seems like Jonas, just like Ja, is really establishing himself as that double-double machine that really checks a lot of boxes for this young core. The first question is, how do you rate on a scale of 1 to 10 Jonas's finishing move on Metu last night and overall his emerging importance for this Grizzlies team going forward? He certainly has his role, and it's starting to be indispensable almost with how well he's connecting with Ja.
I do think that he's lucky that he didn't get ejected, in my opinion, for what happened with Metu. But at the same time, I wouldn't have blamed him for getting ejected, if that makes sense. Like, I don't want to make it sound like I'm judging Jonas for essentially throwing Metu off of him after – I don't know if this is a family show or not, basically teabagging the neck of Jonas Valanciunas after that dunk. I think that was an ejectable offense, the way that it played out. But again, I would not have been mad at Jonas for that happening because I would have done the exact same thing. So I rate it an 8 out of 10 in terms of finishing maneuvers.
Impressive.
And it would have been acceptable for him to be ejected if the refs had done it. And I also wouldn't have blamed Jonas for it happening, if that makes any sense. As far as his importance, listen, I think that with Valanciunas, it's important to understand that he has limitations. And whenever you point out a player's limitations, especially in the Memphis market where the players become as good as Golden pretty quickly, you're made to be a hater or you're made to be someone who doesn't understand basketball. Like, that's one of my favorite critiques of me personally, Sean, is, you know, something that I've played or coached or watched or studied for 27 years. I don't know, because I disagree with someone's specific take on a basketball player. I'm not saying I'm an expert, but I think it's fair to say that Jonas Valanciunas is not a good perimeter defender, and he makes their defensive scheme limited when it comes to him being picked on in the pick and roll. Some teams can do it better than others. But I also think it's important to point out, again, we talk about context, and you can't just talk about limitations without talking about strengths. Jonas is an excellent rebounder. Jonas is a very good offensive player in the post. And he has excellent touch that he has started to find a little bit more consistently coming out of the COVID protocols that you mentioned. The thing that's most important for Jonas right now is he's a wonderful safety blanket for Ja Morant. In terms of, as Morant, as we talked about earlier in the show, as Morant figures out what the heck his next steps are as teams adapt to him defensively, Jonas Valanciunas' pick and roll is always going to create space for him. Because Valanciunas is offensively skilled enough that a defense has to respect his role ability and finish at the rim. And they can't just ignore that. But at the same time, because of that, as teams drop off of Valanciunas, it's going to give Morant more space than he would have if he ran a pick and roll with, say, Xavier Tillman. And that's not supposed to be a knock on Tillman. Tillman has done better than I think anybody expected him to in his extended role with Memphis because of the injuries and everything that's happening. But at the same time, you know, Valanciunas is just a more seasoned player, especially offensively, and that's going to give a defense more to pay attention to than if Ja had to play alongside a Tillman, for example, in the same exact type of set or situation. So I think Valanciunas allows for Morant to go to a tried-and-true look where he knows that whether it's, you know, a kick out to somebody in the corner like Grayson Allen or whether it's a finish with a floater at the rim, whatever tool in his toolkit he wants to use, he's going to be more likely to be able to do what he's comfortable doing at this stage of his young career with Jonas Valanciunas as a pick and roll partner. And that security blanket, that level of safety that he feels, is very valuable. And I do think that that's something that should be added to any argument when you want to talk about moving on from Valanciunas. Obviously, that would be detrimental to Ja Morant in particular at this point. And considering the fact that we talk about all the time that one of the points of this particular season is to figure out who should play alongside Ja in developing Morant long term, that probably would be counterproductive to what they're trying to do. So I would not trade Valanciunas. I think any deal, if there is a deal, would probably need to be centered around Gorgui Dieng's expiring. One of the players we mentioned in the previous segment, you know, Grayson Allen, Desmond Bane, De'Anthony Melton. At some point, you're not going to be able to play all these guys once everyone's healthy. If you want to try to either, in the case of that type of deal, bring in a Zach LaVine, you know, throw a first or two at Chicago and see if that kind of thing would get you that valuable wing scorer, it probably wouldn't. And in that case, maybe you trade Gorgui for another year of cap space being eaten and you add another first-round pick, another asset. There's different ways that they can go about it. But all of it is to say that maybe before the season started, and even at times during the season, say, okay, maybe Jonas Valanciunas going to Charlotte would make sense for both sides. Considering the way the season has played out, I think Jonas Valanciunas has shown that his value to the Grizzlies is probably higher in being in Beale Street Blue than it would be in a transaction, at least this season. I think that's probably a fair thing to say at this point.
Agree completely. And you know, it's that type of consistency, that type of chemistry that you really need to rely on when unexpected things happen. And that's certainly been something the Grizzlies have had to deal with. Well, now, yes, we have had the postponements going on during the season. But, you know, a byproduct of not only that interruption, that uncertainty, is that you eventually got to make those games up. And that's where we're starting to see the schedule be impacted right now. Now, thankfully, it's coming at a time where a lot of us are going to be kind of locked in without choice. But starting tonight against the Pelicans, 4 games in 5 nights, Joe, to me, a really important stretch of the schedule. You know, how you go 3-4 during this schedule, hey, you're playing against some teams that are right there with you in that playoff conversation and some division opponents. Now we're starting to have conversations. However, you go through this next six or seven games where you only win one or two, maybe things change. But the overall point is a very, very congested part of the schedule, a manageable one in terms of who they're playing, but a really important one as well. Just your thoughts on this 4 games in 5 nights and, you know, how the Grizzlies schedule kind of looks from this point on as they try to make up those postponements.
I tweeted about this in the Sunday game against the Kings. Jonas only played 25 or 26 minutes against Sacramento. And I think that what you can look for in these next 4 games, especially as, because again, they're banged up, you want to see how Jenkins finds ways to get guys minutes off the floor on his own. Like, against the Kings don't have any 7-footers. I don't think they have a single one. So Valanciunas didn't need to be out there for 34 minutes to battle anyone. It wasn't necessary. Brandon Clark, Xavier Tillman, those guys can eat those minutes and be successful, and that's exactly what happened. That probably won't be as successful against the Pelicans, who between Zion Williamson and Steven Adams have plenty of size, and that's probably going to be a game that Valanciunas is going to be needed more. That's going to hold true across the rest of the schedule. You know, the next 4 games, they play the Thunder after the Pelicans. Well, maybe that's a game that, again, you could perhaps get Jonas a little bit more rest because Al Horford's a little more perimeter-based. You have the Bazley for OKC. You know, there's guys that have a different skill set that you wouldn't necessarily need Jonas to be that bruiser, and maybe you get Jonas a 26-minute-a-game situation against OKC, but he plays more against the Pelicans. So I think that it's going to come down to matchups. It's going to come down to fits. Ja Morant maybe is the one guy that is the exception to the rule on that. You want to try to get 32 to 34 minutes from Ja wherever you can. But at the same time, you know, it's going to be opportunities. You assume Desmond Bane comes back at some point during this stretch. If he doesn't, that's understandable. Again, I agree with the thoughts and prayers to his family. But if Bane does return, obviously that adds depth. Maybe you can split, you know, Melton maybe comes back and you can have a Melton and Bane game where they're the focus. And then there's another game where you can have an Allen and Dylan kind of focus in terms of how the wings work out and who gets the most minutes. There's ways to do it within your roster, and that is a benefit of the depth that they have as those guys come back. Now, if they don't come back, you do the best you can and you understand that you're in a tough spot. But as you add bodies, hopefully over these next few days, it'll allow for you in game to get people opportunity to get rest and play less minutes than maybe they would normally, which is good considering they're playing a lot of minutes over the next few nights, regardless of how many they play in any individual contest.
Yeah. And I think that another popular word, a buzzword for this schedule is split almost, you know, as the Grizzlies, you know, continue to catch up with the rest of the NBA in terms of overall games played. If they can get through this stretch with a split or better, I think that that's definitely a good outcome. And, you know, we'll see. They were able to split this West Coast trip. And if they can continue to get good starts, I think that's a big thing. If they can continue to get good starts to these games, and I think that they're figuring out how to maintain those good starts, I think that'll certainly be a development. But, Joe, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us. You know, anything going on your end as far as GBB or GBB Live goes? I know we've all been putting out great content. Your latest piece over there in regards to Dylan Brooks and Grayson Allen really shed some light on the ever-evolving, you know, two-guard position when it comes to the Grizzlies. But anything on the horizon for you, as we're going to have plenty of content, obviously, over the next week to 10 days?
Yeah, game coverage, you know, kind of remains the lifeblood in season of GBB. We always have a game preview. We always have some sort of recap. We have all sorts of different kind of stuff with that, so stick with us for those things. I'm actually going to write a piece called The Book of Ja Morant, which is going to it's going to be live on Tuesday, which is going to talk about a lot what we talked about in the second segment there. And, you know, Parker already did a great job, Parker Fleming over at GBB, talking about countering the blitzing. I'm just going to go overall and say, as teams get the book on Ja and it builds, like you talked about earlier, that Lamar Jackson comparison, I used RG3. You know, what are some other ways to add wrinkles to his game so that he can kind of negate what's happening to him in terms of teams collapsing on him, in terms of him being the focal point of scheme? And they're already doing some of it. You saw it against Sacramento with, you know, him playing alongside Tyus or Kyle and getting off the ball more. So I'm going to write about that. And, you know, there's going to be other great features over at GBB. The podcast network continues to turn out 3 or 4 shows a week. So we're in mid-season form, and I'm very fortunate to have guys like you and other tremendous staffers over at GBB. I've never had a football season in February before, so the fact I'm trying to wear all my hats at once is kind of new. We're continuing to chug along despite the craziness of my life, which is a testament to the great folks that I have around me. So stick with GBB. We're going to keep grinding out, heading into the end of this first half of the season with the work that a lot of folks have come to expect from us.
And yet, while you do wear many hats, you wear them well, so can't thank you enough. That'll conclude this show for here at Locked On Grizzlies. Can't thank Joe Mullinax enough. He will be back with us, as always, frequently during the season and beyond. Just great coverage from him, as always. You can find his work and others at GBB. But for this show, thank you so much for joining us. Again, you can find the show Locked On Grizz, at myself, at StatsSAC. You can find the podcast wherever podcasts are available: Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you may find your podcast. For Joe Mullinax, my name is Sean Coleman. It's been a pleasure. We'll talk to you again soon here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.